is March Twisdale, producer and host of Prose, Poetry, and Purpose, and I'd like to welcome you to my interview with Kathy Abascal. Hello, and thanks for joining me today.
Hi.
Prose, Poetry, and Purpose is recorded in the studios of Voice of Vashon, broadcast at 11 a.m. on 101.9 FM KVSH. Thank you for joining me, and we're going to dive right into this show. To get us started, Kathy, I asked my authors to frame themselves for our listeners. So tell us a little bit about who you are.
Sure. I'll start back. I trained to become a professional herbalist. Did a lot of writing, research, and sort of clinical practice with herbs. But eventually started developing health problems myself and ended up fixing that with diet. And so I shifted from herbs to food and found it extremely helpful.
Right. So we have three books here. If you live on Vashon, you definitely have heard about Kathy Abascal and To Quiet Inflammation Diet, or TQI diet, right?
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
Everyone on Vashon has heard of this. In fact, you have altered the menus of many of the restaurants on the island because people come in and they're like, I'm hungry and I have these specific sort of interests and goals. And so now there's delicious food everywhere that specifically matches your diet. For those of you, though, who are not from Vashon, we've got three books we're going to take a look at today. One is Herbs and Influenza, which was actually published when?
I think 2005 or 6.
Right. It talks about how herbs were used in the 1918 flu pandemic and how effective they were compared to the normative practices of the time. Then we have these other two books, which are sort of companions to each other.
Yeah, they're set, actually.
Okay, exactly. These come with anyone who takes your online or in-person classes.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, they're automatically included. So it's called The Abascal Way.
It's sort of the reference book for the class.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But it's more than just that, because it's definitely, I think the class is brilliant. I took it. I loved it. But I think this book is almost a standalone, maybe, for someone who couldn't take the class?
Yes, people reuse it that way. Although, frankly, a lot of people have trouble changing based on a book.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, that you're right, and the class is so useful. Okay, so what you were saying is that essentially you were eating a fairly normative American diet and using herbalism and whatnot to try to help your body feel healthy, and the herbs maybe weren't able to counteract the negative effects of the diet.
The food.
And then once you completely change what went into your body, bam, everything sort of went away.
Yes.
All right.
Yes, it was actually pretty amazing what food can do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we all say we are what we eat, and we all ignore that every time we go buy some Oreos because we don't want to be an Oreo. But, you know. All right. So I'm going to throw out there this thing that probably anyone who has ever had bad experiences with, quote, diets in the past, this is probably one of the least obnoxious and quirky and sort of silly, foo-foo, stupid diet concept you could possibly imagine. This seems to me more like you took a chemist's brain and applied it to an understanding of how food interacts with the body and said, let's be smart about this.
Yes, and practical.
Okay. So go ahead and tell us a little bit about the inciting incident in your life and how you came about to discover this for yourself.
Well, it really started when I found myself having gained weight, having frozen shoulders. I'd wake up in the morning and my ankles would be stiff. And then I threw up my back and really just couldn't function. Looked at allopathic pain treatments, but came to realize that I actually needed to try to change how I ate to sort of stop this deterioration.
So you had put on some extra weight around what decade of your life?
I was probably, let's see, it's about 50.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
Because I'm 44, and in my 30s, I was extremely active. You know, I did theater with my kids, I rode my horse, I ran, I did yoga, I rode my bike everywhere, and then I injured myself. I pulled both my hamstrings.
That'll do it.
And basically, you can't do any of those things. And it took about a year. And during that year, I made good use of it. I wrote the first draft of my novel. That's brilliant. But something happened where my body did that thing that so many people do where they sit at a desk job all the time. Yeah. And I just was sedentary for a year. Oh my gosh. It had such a deep, lasting, lingering impact on metabolism, whatever you want to call it. My body just changed. I feel like a different person.
Yeah.
And that was when I was motivated. About 2 years after that, I was just sort of horrified by not being able to naturally spring back. And I came in and started doing Bikram yoga and taking your class. And everything was just, it just all changed.
Yeah.
In 2 months, it just went, whew, right back.
It's actually amazing. I think that when I started it, I had this theoretical understanding that it would help. Mm-hmm. But I had no idea what it actually could do for me and other people.
Now, you had a little bit of weight gain, and then you had a frozen shoulder. Your back
two
went
frozen.
Out. Two frozen shoulders.
Yes.
Back went out. Ankles were bothering you. I don't know how many of us would have jumped to the idea that food would affect frozen shoulder. So how did you not, like, just go down a chiropractic direction? What ended up causing you to see the food link?
That's probably because I'm an herbalist. I work with plants.
Right.
And so a lot of the research and writing I did on herbs carry over. You know, there's a fuzzy line between herbs as food, herbs as medicine.
Right.
So we use turmeric as an herbal supplement, but we cook with turmeric. So as you research turmeric, you start to see its potential in kind of a different way.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, now that's interesting. That brings up for me the specific to turmeric is, I believe, in India, it's like a heavily used
spice.
So in America, we have this massive epidemic of colon cancer, and it virtually doesn't exist in India.
Right.
Because turmeric is, I think, especially good for the health of skin and anti-inflammation stuff.
Actually, I think turmeric works for so many different things.
Okay, right.
That it's actually hard to pinpoint.
Yeah.
One of its main components is curcumin. And I've started to write articles when I call it the cure-all.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So here you've got people who are eating mostly plant, vegetarian diet, lots of high fiber, and tons of turmeric, and then no colon cancer.
Yep. And we see the same thing in Africa. So they did a recent study where they took people on sort of a traditional American diet and people on an African traditional diet. Looked at their intestinal microbes, looked at their colon cancer rates.
Right.
And, of course, found people in Africa were much, much healthier.
Right.
And then they had them switch their diets for 2 weeks and could actually watch a shift in the species of microbes they grew.
In just 2 weeks.
Just 2 weeks, the Americans began to improve.
Right.
And the poor Africans, not so much.
Yeah. Now, when I was in the class, I think a lot of people who are listening to this show right now will relate to my personal experience of I consider myself to be sort of a sugar addict. And that doesn't mean that I don't eat hard candy. I never chew gum. I don't drink soda pop. I'm not talking that concept of sugar.
It's such
Explain
a part.
Explain a little bit about how our, what are the certain components of food in our culture that convert directly into those sugars that cause the sugar spikes, even though you might not think you're eating something sugary, but it's going to turn into sugar. Go a little bit into that.
First off, we have sugar added to everything we eat, from tomato sauces to salad dressings to our coffee, our tea, our mustard, our ketchup. Virtually every processed food we buy comes with added concentrated sugars.
It's true.
Yep. And then on top of that, even the healthy of us typically eat refined grains. We eat refined pasta. Mm-hmm. We eat foods our body easily converts into sugar. without the benefit of fiber and nutrients to kind of control that effect.
Right. Okay, so we've got the hidden sugars, which are just there in places that they wouldn't have been put there by mom when she was at home making homemade pasta sauce.
Right.
Unless, you know, someone had brought home a honeybee hive recently or something.
Exactly.
She didn't have, you know, a bunch of sugar sitting around 300 years ago in Italy at the time when they'd actually brought South American tomatoes to Italy. I always think that's hilarious how we think of Italians and tomato sauce. And I'm like, yeah, but that's only 500 years ago, maybe. So, right, so we have the hidden sugars. But also, I think what I found when I was younger, I was 28, and I gave birth to my second son. And a few months later, I went 100% raw while I was nursing both of my children, a five-month-old and a three-year-old. And 100% raw means 100% raw. It means for me it was vegan. I didn't want to do raw meat. I was 100% raw for almost a year.
Well, that's a challenge.
Oh, it's a challenge, but it feels so good. You feel like you'll never be sick again for the rest of your life. It's just brilliant. But what was interesting was that I had no ups and no downs. I had a constant, steady energy. And I feel like I live every single day of my life coming off of a crash, and I'm in the coffee shop getting my 4 p.m. coffee, or I'm grabbing, you know, I feel like I live my whole life on this up and down energy
thing. Most of us do.
But when I did your diet, especially that first period, I had the same experience that I did with raw. Even though I was able to have cooked foods, it wasn't as extreme as the raw diet or as hard to manage. But I lost all the ups and downs. I just had steady energy.
Yeah, it normalizes blood sugar really, really quickly. And in fact, even people with type 2 diabetes very quickly usually are able to either normalize their blood sugars or even get off their medication for blood sugar highs and lows.
Right, right, right. Because type 2 is something that we largely is the result of the fatigue caused to the systems in the body that modulate
in
sugar.
Part, I mean, a lot of it is simply that we live in a constant sugar insulin state.
Right.
You know, we're constantly eating and we're constantly spiking our blood sugar. And it has its consequences. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So you wrote the book and you have classes. Which came first?
Classes. Classes came first.
So,
and it began really with the paper handouts.
Okay.
Which was difficult for students because classes run an hour or an hour and a half.
Right.
And they're detailed nutrition classes.
Right.
They really are kind of college level. And so people would want reference material. They'd want to be able to go back and sort of go over it again just to make sure they hadn't missed things. So I sort of evolved from handouts to booklets. And I think I taught with booklets for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And then wrote the book to actually sort of mirror the class and allow people to revisit.
Right.
Yeah, what we cover.
Now, for local people who are on the island, they can swing by the Vashon Bookshop, and copies of both of your books are there. And for anyone who's interested in taking the class, www.tqidiet.com is the website.
Yes.
Okay. All right. And you also have, I think, online support for people who have taken the classes, right? They have chat rooms and
stuff? Well, it's not so much a chat room as it's kind of a low-tech board.
Okay.
But it's where students can go. They post restaurant reviews. They can ask questions. People who need more detailed feedback can actually post food diaries.
So it's a message board?
Yes.
Okay, got it.
And then in addition to that, I use a blog to actually update research because things do change. The book came out 5 years ago, so I use a blog for that. And then we have a Facebook page that is more for recipes.
Right. Yeah. What I liked about this, now, the raw food diet, obviously, easy to remember. If it's been cooked, you don't eat it. If it hasn't been cooked, you can eat it. Basically, that was simple.
Hopefully, it was a bit more detailed.
No, that was basically it. No, really, raw food is just based upon the concept of raw food. Some people get a little bit more into making fancy, you know, 15 ingredients going together and you've got a raw ice cream or whatever. And other people will say, no, you should really eat one food at a time like the animals would. And so there's all the ranges.
Okay.
But what I liked about the TQI diet was that it had reasons for each aspect of the shift or the change that a person might want to make.
Yes.
And that's what's so great, I think, about taking the class. I agree, just picking up the book is going to be 5% as effective as taking that 2-month class, because the way that you lay it out, just I walk out motivated to add that into my life. And there, you said there were 3 different sections to the book or to the concept. Do you want to touch on each one of those?
Well, basically, I try to start off with a really short 3-week, let's do everything we can to quiet inflammation.
Right.
And that's really to give people a personal physical sense that changing their diet actually would make a difference.
Right.
And that's, of course, really important motivationally. One, that it's short. And 2, that they'll feel the difference. Then the next section is actually testing foods, because while we are inflamed, it's really easy to absorb food proteins usually and become sensitized to different foods.
And that has to do with sort of the concept of the leaky gut?
Yes, it's sort of the same thing. Leaky gut is kind of your intestinal lining becomes kind of loose. Mm-hmm. And you can actually admit foreign compounds that trouble your body.
Okay.
And because we eat a lot of wheat and dairy in our food culture, quite frequently what we've absorbed are wheat and dairy protein.
Mm-hmm.
So those are common food triggers. Mm-hmm. But equally, it could be any food you eat frequently.
So is it specifically the protein of a food that the body's immune system is most likely triggered by?
Usually. And that's because
people don't think of grain as being a protein.
No.
But it's the protein in the grain.
Has protein.
So that's why nut allergies might happen more often, because they are almost all protein.
That's in part, and they're complex. Complexity will play a role too.
Okay.
But the reason we typically react to proteins is because our immune system identifies viruses and bacteria by their foreign proteins on the surface.
It's amazing.
Yeah, and that's why when we have transplants, somebody else's organs.
Yeah.
You have to suppress the immune system because we have unique personal proteins on our cells.
Wow.
So as you begin to absorb parts of foreign proteins, it's an easy trigger. There are other compounds that can cause problems. Nightshades will have complex chemicals called alkaloids that are sort of close to toxic.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are other compounds that can be absorbed and trigger reactions, but it's typically a protein in a food.
Interesting. And then the third section.
Third section is where we try to expand how we eat to include more of foods we actually shouldn't be eating. Trying to come up with some way to balance between our willingness to be healthy and our reluctance to give up our quote-unquote comfort foods and drinks.
Oh, yeah.
That's a tricky part.
It's huge. The emotional connections that we form with comfort foods. I mean, you know, like for me, I know dairy's not good. So having a latte is never good for me physically. Right. But if I'm ever in a situation of stress or if I'm feeling sort of, I mean, there's a whole host. There's a whole host of emotional states I can be in where the first thought I have is, it would just be so nice to go sit down at the cafe with my latte and, you know, a croissant and just sit there. It's like my meditation food almost, yeah. You know?
And that's because we self-medicate with those foods. Mm. They actually reduce stress hormones briefly.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but then your stomach hurts.
Yes. And then it backfires. It backfires. But typically right. What we do when it backfires is want to self-medicate again.
Yeah.
So it's real easy to get locked into kind of a downward spiral.
And we talk a lot. 2.5 weeks later, heart burns back and your stomach and you feel horrible and your head hurts and you're dehydrated and your lips are chapped. And anyone else going through this?
So we talk a lot about self-medication and class 5, sort of the biochemistry of it.
Right.
Try to come up with ways to break once you've sort of headed on that downward spiral. We try to come up with ways to kind of break it. And in part, it helps to know that that's actually what you're doing.
Yes, yes. Yeah, I know. I'm like, okay, so maybe when I'm stressed out, I'll give myself permission to sit down for a half an hour and read a favorite book. Or, you know, I'm trying to come up with some physical activity something I'm doing that makes me feel better. Right. So when I am stressed out, I'm like, oh, I'll go do that. It'll make me feel great. You know?
But it's tricky to kind of get away from food.
Well, and there's so many other people around you who are doing the food medication thing.
Sure.
So you know that not only will you go to the cafe, you're not alone. You can look around and there's five of your friends in the room all doing the same thing.
Try a family gathering.
There you go. So what can we do to also positively influence those around us, especially the kids?
Kids are tricky. I mean, I think it's important when you first start off not to reward your kids with sugary things.
Right.
That would be one huge step.
It's true.
You know. And actually, I mean, I think if parents set an example, I mean, if you eat good food, if you have a garden, your kids are much, much more likely to follow that. Maybe not. I mean, it's hard to offset school lunches and the influence of other children.
Well, and in the teen years, they're going to do whatever. But it's like
but
later
they can get
in
back
life.
To it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I grew up on homemade bread. Now, granted, it's a wheat product, whatever. But still, my dad, we never bought a loaf of bread my entire childhood. Well, he just always made bread, put it in the freezer, pulled out one loaf after the other, you know, 2 months later, made a whole bunch more bread. And so for me, one of the most beautiful memories from childhood was that slice of bread out of a loaf that just came out of the oven,
sure.
You know. And
it smells good, too.
Yeah, but it's like, I remember that. So later I came back to it.
Yeah.
I was making my own homemade bread when I was like 22 years old in college.
Yeah. You know? And they're starting to discover as well that if we actually set up a really good intestinal flora in our children,
right,
that stays with them. Even through years of poor eating. Mm-hmm. And they just don't develop the health problems.
Right.
And it's probably especially important in our culture because we have studies now that show that a week on antibiotics can actually disrupt a person's flora for 2 years.
Oh, God. You know, I'm having so much fun with this interview. This is just fabulous. But I need to take a quick break to remind everyone who's just joined us that you're listening to Prose, Poetry, and Purpose. My name is March Twisdale. I'm interviewing Kathy Abascal. And this is KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vashon. Thank you for tuning in. And the only reason we're here is because of the incredible support we get here at home from our underwriters. For example, we have mostly true Vashon tours. I love this. I went on one of these myself a few months ago. Tons of fun. Based on the popular Mostly True history book series, these tours offer a lighthearted perspective on the island's past with visits to actual historical events and locations. Along the way, you experience all that Vashon has to offer in the way of local food, spirits, and recreation. Information and tickets are at vashontours.com or the Hinge Gallery, located at Vashon Highway and 174th Avenue. That's just a few blocks down from the farmer's market. Okie doke. So we also get support for KVSH programming from Island Spring Organics. 40 years of organic, non-GMO soy foods made daily right here on Vashon Island. Tours are available at islandspringorganics.com, or you can call 206-463-9848. And now we're going to get back to my interview with Kathy Abascal. So what was it that you were saying?
So it becomes, again, incredibly important to be eating well if you're going to give your kid antibiotics. It needs a counter.
A lot of us are dealing with old wounds and to our system.
It takes longer than 3 weeks to recover from it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the class is a start.
So I have had so many people come to me and talk about the drastic and dramatic changes that have happened in their bodies relatively quickly, and they're thrilled. On the back of your book, I'm going to read just a couple of them. This one, my inflammation is gone. The cold weather was not why my arthritic fingers, knuckles hurt painfully. It was my diet. All the pain, 24/7, is gone. It feels wonderful.
Yeah.
Let's see. I have lost 52 pounds and 12 inches off my waist. I enjoy the food and remind myself that if I owned a Ferrari, I sure wouldn't pour sugar into the gas tank. And that one's really cute.
Yes.
So when I took your class, within 3 weeks, I was at a point where I would get up, and when I got out of bed and I would stand on the ground, my feet hurt.
Yeah.
And
I had that's what I called my stiff ankles. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And I just thought, something's got to go. And that's when I thought, maybe it's inflammation. Within 3 weeks of being on this diet, I was climbing out of bed. I was jumping out of bed again, like kids do.
It's so great.
It's only going 3 weeks. It was amazing. I'm not sure I want to talk about so much any, quote, rules. No.
Right.
But it's more like... what's going on with that sugar roller coaster thing, and it's linked to fat? There was a...
Sure,
explain that little cycle a little
bit. Okay. Basically, we're set up to... Our liver controls our blood sugar levels. So ideally, if you're healthy and you eat healthy food, your liver will, in response to insulin, absorb that sugar, and it stores it in your muscle and liver cells. And then as you move about through your day, you use up the sugar in your blood, and a different hormone will get your liver to gradually release that sugar. And then when you run out, your brain will sort of throw a hissy fit and say it's time to eat. And you'll eat another healthy meal. So you have this habit, you eat, you store sugar, you burn it, then you eat. We, though, start to spike our blood sugar levels with sweeter foods. And so we secrete extra insulin. And initially, that's not a problem. Your body, your liver will take all the blood sugar and store it. So you're back to normal. But then when your blood sugar levels drop, the opposing hormone can't come into play because you've got extra insulin. You're sort of in an insulin-dominated state. And so your blood sugar levels stay down, and your brain throws its hissy fit and says, you must go eat now.
Mm-hmm.
And it will want a quick blood sugar rise. So it's going to direct you toward more foods that spike your blood sugar levels.
Right.
So now you're eating and you're storing sugar. You're eating, storing sugar. Your liver eventually fills up and quits responding to insulin. So the body's backup plan is insulin now tells your fat cells to absorb the sugar and store it as fat.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why most of us were now eating, storing fat, eating. Storing fat.
It's much harder to pull the the resources out of fat cells than it is to pull it out of the liver station.
There's that, so the but more importantly, you're in this insulin-dominated state where you aren't pulling it really from anywhere. And that's when weight gain typically begins to happen. And you start to move toward insulin resistance, toward diabetes, certainly toward weight gain. And it throws your blood fats off. Typically, your blood pressure will start rising because you're just generally inflamed.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And so we break that cycle initially simply by having times when we absolutely do not eat.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm. To kind of get that break.
It's true. I like the sit down, look at my plate of food and actually eat what's on the plate rather than having the plate, and I'm sure everyone listening can relate to this, about 10 inches to my left because I've got my laptop in front of me. And an hour later, I've eaten, you know, what I could have eaten in 8 or 10 minutes is like finally done an hour later, you know. And and within 20 minutes, you're up making another snack or something like that.
Yeah. So that's one of the things we break pretty much quickly. And we talk about why. And we talk about how to handle the fact that some people going without food for several hours will start to experience blood sugar lows if they don't do the diet right. And that's often what people sort of attribute to a detox reaction.
Oh.
When in fact you're not detoxing.
Right.
You're simply stressed.
I mean, you can have detox.
You, not really.
Oh, let's talk about that a little bit. I mean, I've... So what do you... What's the difference then for between the concept of detox or the concept of feeling stress? Because a lot of people will say, you know, if you go off sugar, if you do this, if you do that, you know, that the candida, like, will start to die off, and then your body gets overwhelmed, and then you feel sort of sick for about a week, and your body's cleaning it out. That's the concept I usually hear of around detox.
Yeah.
So does that not happen?
No. Actually, I don't think it does.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, usually as you change your diet, you change your intestinal flora.
Right.
So you quit feeding, and it's not just candida. It's actually probably more yeast-loving bacteria.
So you yeast, yeast?
I mean sugar-loving.
Sugar-loving bacteria more than yeast?
Yeah, we
actually
only have a few yeast, and candida specializes in simple sugar.
Right, right.
But we have tons of bacteria that are inflammatory strains.
Really?
That also are sugar metabolizers. Many, many more than we have candida. As we quit feeding them, they typically kind of just go into hibernation. And we feed other strains that actually are anti-inflammatory. And this should make you feel better, generally. So this concept that you are detoxing and feel worse for a while usually is simply that you aren't really maintaining your blood sugars properly.
Mm-hmm.
So you're developing food cravings, headaches, irritability, insomnia, fatigue.
And a lot of that is just from the blood sugar. Well, if you
it's blood sugar yo-yo.
Yeah.
So we talk about how to use fats and proteins to kind of prevent that reaction.
Because they take longer to digest.
Metabolize, yeah.
Yeah, on the raw diet, even though you do have nuts and whatnot, there's it's maybe less heavy in proteins. And so you're generally sort of encouraged to graze or eat
when you want to. The raw diet can be a little too high in sweet fruits and vegetables if you aren't
depending on
careful.
How people do it.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a great diet, but it can be tricky to implement well.
All right, so when you decided to write the book, what was the process of writing this book like for you? You'd written one before, so was it...
Yeah, I've actually done a lot of writing over my career. I started off as a lawyer, so I've written briefs, I've written draft opinions, and then moved into medical research. And so I have kind of a long background in nonfiction writing.
Right.
But it's still kind of a tortuous process, I find. So,
and my listeners out there who are amateur or professional writers at this point are nodding their heads.
Yes. So, it took me a long time to write the book. I think largely it's procrastination, which in my case manifests as, oh, I need to do some more research.
Right.
I'm trying to write a second book now, and I find myself sort of veering off to
read
this other book. It's so much more fun.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, you know. I love research. Yes. It's like down the rabbit hole I go.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the book was kind of slow and tortuous that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I just think you do a brilliant job. Is this self-published?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Well, congratulations then, because there's a perfect balance between white space and text.
Yes.
And images.
Yes.
This is not my copy that I have in my kitchen. The copy I have in my kitchen is a couple of dog-eared pages where, okay, I'm hungry. I need a snack. Flip.
What can I eat?
You know, okay, what can I eat? All right, mangoes. Yay! So what do you think has been maybe the best outcome from this book? What did you, at some point you said, I'm so glad I wrote this book. It worked great in this way. This was wonderful. What was it that worked best, you think?
Well, I think it's the student feedback, both from classes, but from the book as well. Simply people who've bought the book and then have sent emails sort of describing how life-changing it is. And that's actually what keeps me going. Because, you know, years into it, you get kind of fatigued.
Yeah.
There's that moment before class where you go, shoot, I should retire. Then you get to the classroom and somebody will come up and say, I can't believe I can play the piano again.
Right.
And you can just watch somebody's life improve. You know, it's a real gift, both for them, but for me too.
Yeah. Anytime we do something for a period of time, especially when it's in service to others, truly the reward is watching it be successful.
Yes.
I taught ballroom dancing, I think, for 7 years, and I'd get a little fatigued sometimes, you know, getting out the house, leaving the kids, you know, whatever. But, you know, 10 minutes in, I'm watching married couples laughing together
experience.
And then I'd be like, okay, this is why I'm here.
Yes.
This is what it's all for. Yeah. So if a person's interested in doing this, I mean, there's sort of pretty much almost every possible medical condition that a person could be dealing with that's linked to inflammation.
Yes.
Is like a lot. I mean, broken arm is not linked to inflammation, but
it is. It's not caused.
Right,
but
right.
But your healing process will change dramatically if you quiet that inflammation, especially right then.
But for what I meant was like for not things like that, I want to sort of help my listeners identify that what they're going through may not be normal, because there's the people who think I'm normal, healthy, when really they're just used to suffering.
Yeah.
And then there's people who are, I'm normal in the realm of unhealthy. Lots of people are unhealthy like me. I take a few pills, whatever. This is normal. And all of that could literally go away.
Yeah. Probably the most recent example was a friend who thought he had heart problems. Went and got a stress test. And, of course, was tremendously relieved when he found out that it's actually acid reflux. So on the way home, he picks up the purple pill and Zantac.
Of course.
And comes in and says, wow, I feel better. And I'm going, well, have you looked at the side effects of that medication, which includes everything from impotence to bone loss and headaches and fatigue?
Yeah.
Combined with the fact that MDs themselves actually say that a good 90% of people could get off that medication if they changed their diet.
Well, and also, the medication we're talking about is...
It's antacids. And that's where, you know, when we do foods, they've been tested by humans for eons.
Right.
You know, and that's why getting back to real traditional foods make such a difference.
Right.
When we move away from the additives and the flavorings and the sugars and the
coloring.
Strangeness. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, they're starting to do some really good research on what a difference those chemicals actually are making in terms of poor health.
Right.
And that's
right.
Another place people are sort of startled when they first start the diet,
mm-hmm.
when they have to eliminate natural flavors. I mean,
right.
We're sort of, why? It's in my herbal tea. It's in my everything.
Well, natural flavor must just be like oregano and turmeric,
you
right?
You think, but not.
Yeah.
Not.
Yeah.
It's a chemical. Yeah.
So we've got, so natural flavors is legally a term that the food industry is allowed to apply to something like 200 ingredients or something crazy like that?
Huge, huge numbers. Basically, a natural flavor is anything that is extracted from a food, a natural product that's used to flavor.
So MSG is a natural flavoring because it comes out of seaweed, right?
Yeah.
Right. So if it says natural flavoring, it just means it could be 10 of
it's
those
just
mixed
as,
together.
It's
could be
just
one,
as
it's
artificial, really, as an artificial flavor.
Now let's talk a little bit about sweeteners because, of course, there are the sweeteners that do not actually affect the, supposedly don't affect the blood sugar in the same way, but you do a really good job of explaining how the brain responds to the flavor of sweetness anyways. So what is it about, like, artificial sweeteners and all that
well,
stuff?
Well, artificial sweeteners, it turns out, actually, it's not just the brain, but it's our flora. They found that artificial sweeteners, I mean, we tend to like them because they don't have calories.
Mm-hmm.
And they won't raise our blood sugar levels. And so we've come to believe that, well, we're good to go then. Can't be having an effect. But they now show that artificial sweeteners actually feed microbes that move people toward diabetes and add fat cells to their bodies,
mm-hmm.
and then have other inflammatory chemical effects.
Right. So a lot of people are familiar with the idea of, I think, NutraSweet is the brand name for what chemical?
It's an aspartame. I forget.
Aspartame is how I pronounce it. You probably have the proper pronunciation there.
I probably don't.
Oh. I'm always like, okay, a scientist would say it the right way.
No.
Okay.
No.
So we've got, a lot of people are nervous about that. There's lots of research and studies showing, you know, migraine links to aspartame and all these other things. But then, especially on Vashon, our community is going to love, for example, we had that little back and forth conversation about stevia. Which and then there's xylitol. So those two are really popular as there's all these ways in which they're promoted as being positive. And so the one thing that we do is we have those plants. We have the actual stevia plants.
Yeah.
And so my son will go out and he'll just pick a leaf off like maybe once a day or every other day and chew on it and be like, oh, I love these leaves. And that's it, though. He takes one little leaf that's about an inch long, chews on it, and then he says, oh, it's such a fun little plant, and he walks away.
Yeah, most people doing stevia actually are doing chemical concentrated extracts from the stevia plant.
Right.
They're actually doing stevia sides, and they're coming up with modified enzyme processes to actually concentrate these very strange sweeteners.
Okay.
And so it becomes much, much more like doing Splenda. You know, the little drops. Most people aren't actually crumbling little dried leaves into what they're doing. And so they need to kind of understand that that actually is a chemical.
If it's white, powdered, and concentrated, it sort of doesn't matter where it came from. It's not normative for the body.
Now, part of the problem of doing even stevia, if you did more than, say, what your son does,
mm-hmm.
it's part of the benefit of getting rid of concentrated sweeteners is your real food is much more flavorful. And we sort of live in a culture where I think as people move away from sugar, they discover that much of what they thought was bitter actually is tangy or tart or flavorful. And much of their fruit actually is almost too sweet.
Yep.
I've had people sort of say, well, I used to like apples with nut butter for breakfast, but they're too sweet.
Yep. Well, like these
and
grapes.
So they had to switch.
So yeah. I wanted to have a snack ready available because I had, it was a complicated morning, right? Yep. You know, we're a one family car, and with the snow, we don't have Wi-Fi or we don't have internet yet at the house. So my husband's going here and my son's going there and I'm going here. And it's like, right. So I said, okay, I'm getting breakfast, but I'm not going to be home until about maybe 12:30. I'm going to need a midday snack.
Yeah.
So I came up here to make sure it was warm enough, went to Minglement to grab a snack. So I'm like, okay, I got my nut proteins and then I've got my grapes. I ate a couple grapes and I was like, oh, those are so sweet, you know?
We breed them to be almost too sweet after a while.
Yeah.
And part of being able to rediscover that food is tasty.
Right.
Requires moving away from concentrated sweet.
Yeah. You know, that is the one thing. So two mornings ago, I know what it was. I had a cantaloupe, and I usually just, we have our own chickens, so I really love our own eggs. So my favorite breakfast is just basically an egg with a plate of fruit or stir-fried veggies.
That's usually what
one or the
I
other.
Have to.
Yeah, and I'm sitting there eating this creamy yolk egg, you know, and then I'm taking a couple bites of this perfectly ripe cantaloupe, and like I put my hands on the counter and just was like, oh, this tastes so good. And the thing about everything I ate when I first experimented with the Kathy Abascal diet, the TQI diet, is I just kept saying to my husband and my kids, this food tastes so good. Yeah. It tastes so good. Yeah. And I would say, well, what would I have eaten if I was doing the really fast, don't have time to cook anything, rush, out of a box type of food? And I realized it was all very bland, simple, singular, dominant flavor. So you're right. I mean, food is delicious.
Yeah.
If we just let ourselves enjoy eating it.
Yes. Yep, I agree.
Yeah.
And your body weighs in because it actually gets nutrients too.
Right.
And there's that sort of harmony that happens, between flavor and nutritional wisdom from the body.
Yeah, you eat that big bowl of pasta, and it tastes really great because of the whatever, but in a way, you feel like really what you're doing is you're just eating it faster and faster. As you're like, you're going for the starchy sugar hit you're going to get in a way.
Yes.
Or just to fill the belly.
And plus, I think sometimes you have to eat so much to be able to get the nutrients your body's craving. Your breakfast was small, but it hit the spot.
Right.
And so you can quit eating. Yeah.
Yeah. That was the other thing I noticed was that after a few weeks, the quantity of what I was eating, I feel like any time I've been on just eating crapola food for a while, and then I say, all right, I'm just shifting to whole foods, whatever. It takes about maybe 2 weeks or so, like my body is saying, yay, we're getting the nutrients.
Yes.
And then the body says, okay, we got our nutrients.
Yep.
We don't, we're good. Okay. And then all of a sudden I'm eating smaller and smaller amounts. And I'm like, oh, right, because everything I eat is good for me. And I tanked up there. I got caught up on a way.
Exactly.
And now I'm just even keel.
Yeah, I did that with avocados, I think, when I first started. I would eat and eat and eat them.
Yep.
And then one day I came home and discovered that it actually had molded. You know, that I'd sort of filled up.
Yeah.
And I didn't really want that many avocados anymore.
The nice thing with the raw diet, they talk a lot about checking in with your body. Yeah. So, like, you know, you walk into a grocery store and you walk up and you look at some parsley. And you're like, oh, for some reason that I smelled it from across the aisle.
Oh,
and you take a little piece off and you taste it. And if it tastes sweet, it means your body right now wants something that's in that parsley. And then maybe 2 days later, you walk over to the parsley and it doesn't smell quite right. You take a little bite, it tastes bitter. And you go, oh, my body got what it needed. Like, your taste buds will change based upon whatever component. And that, you're more aware of that when you've been raw for a while.
Yeah.
You become aware of your body talking
to you. I
think
the same thing happens even if you just do healthy.
Mm-hmm,
it takes a while, though, to actually get your body to be able to once again communicate about food
and
what it actually wants, as opposed to this sort of brain-driven stress response.
How long do you think it takes for most people to feel like they get past the, it's not addiction, but it's the when do they say, cravings, that's it. When do people typically say, wow, I went through a whole day and I didn't have a massive craving moment?
Actually, I usually hear back, I have check-in emails for students.
Right.
Each week when they're in class. And a lot of people, actually, even after class one, mm-hmm. will comment that it's remarkable. They expected sugar cravings to be a big, big problem,
mm-hmm.
but they aren't. Certainly by week two, I'd say almost everybody.
Yeah.
Unless they're eating a food that stresses them.
Right.
And
that's
where, if sugar cravings don't go away, we begin to look at what else might you be eating that your body can't handle right now.
That's sending you off chasing down sugar because you're under stress still. Yeah. So there's so much that a person will get out of your, is 7 weeks or 8 weeks right now, or six?
It's just five.
Five? For some reason I thought it was seven, an odd number.
Yeah.
Okay. So so for folks who are interested, I'm going to put it this way. You're going to live a lot of years in this life, and taking 5 weeks out of your life to run this particular experiment is a can't hurt you and may very well dramatically alter the rest of your life type of experimental moment. And I wish everyone in America at one point was able to do your 5 week program, because so many of them would gain so much, because you can't know until you try it.
That's right. And the knowledge really helps. And if people are curious, I'm actually going to be posting sort of a little free intro video that kind of goes through some of the reasons why I think TQI is better than most other diets.
Oh, right.
And I agree. Also could be combined with many of them. So you could do a raw food version of TQI.
I think paleo would be a nice blend as well.
It's a good blend too. So we talk about the pros and cons of that. And then there are a lot of student stories for people who are sort of wondering, would this actually help my condition?
And so, right. Oh, that's something we haven't. We didn't go into a full list of it, but basically, there's just dozens and dozens and dozens of different types of conditions or issues that people have walked in with, and they're floored that, the doctor said nothing was going to help except this pill or blah, blah, blah. And within weeks, or at the most, maybe a month or two, it's like, just shocking improvements that no one would have predicted were possible.
And what's really fun, I think increasingly a significant number of students come referred by healthcare providers.
Oh, nice. Yes. Good.
Yes. And I even have a doc who moved out from Seattle to Cleveland, who's at a wellness clinic there, who actually sells books and recommends the class.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. Well, I'm just so grateful that you have been willing to take the time out of your life to share what you discovered that worked for you with other people, because you could have just taken care of yourself and gone on to do whatever, and instead you're,
enjoying this.
Yes, but still it is a gift and a choice that you made to share forward. And that's the basis of the show, inspiring, positive social change in the world. One reader, one class taker, one eater at a time.
Sounds great.
Yay. All right. Well, unfortunately, very, very unfortunately, we are literally out of time. So I'm going to have to let you go. For those of you who are just now joining us, you've been listening to Prose, Poetry, and Purpose. My name is March Twisdale, and I have been interviewing Kathy Abascal, author and teacher of the amazingly successful Two Quiet Inflammation Diet. It's also called the TQI Diet. You can find out more at www.tqidiet.com. Thank you very much for joining us today, and... I'm going to leave you now with the inspirational and timely song, We Are the Many, created by musical activist Makana.
Ye come here, gather round the stage. The time has come for us to voice our rage against the ones who've trapped us in a cage to steal from us the value of our wage from underneath the vestiture of law. The lobbyists at Washington do gnaw at liberty, the bureaucrats guffaw. And until they are purged, we won't withdraw. We'll occupy the streets, we'll occupy the courts, we'll occupy the offices of you till you do the bidding of the many, not the few. Our nation was built upon the right of every person to improve their plight. But laws of this republic they rewrite, and now a few own everything in sight. They own it free of liability. They own that they are not like you and me. Their influence dictates legality. And until they are stopped, we are not free. We'll occupy the streets, we'll occupy the courts, we'll occupy the offices of you till you do the bidding of the many, not the few. You enforce your monopolies with guns while sacrificing our daughters and sons. But certain things belong to everyone. Your thievery has left the people none. So take heed of our notice to redress. We had little to lose, we must confess. Your empty words do leave us unimpressed. A growing number join us in protest. We occupy the streets, we occupy the courts, we occupy the offices of you till you do the bidding of the many, not the few. You can't divide us into sides, and from our gaze you cannot hide. Denial serves to amplify, and our allegiance you can't buy. Our government is not for sale. The banks do not deserve a bail. We will not reward those who fail. We'll not move till we prevail. We'll occupy the streets, we'll occupy the courts, we'll occupy the offices of you till you do the bidding of the many, not the few. We'll occupy the streets, we'll occupy the courts, will occupy the offices of you till you do the bidding of the many, not the few. We are the many, you are the few.